You're tuning in to another episode of the Authentic Me podcast with your host, Mel Yu. If you are seeking growth, looking to vibrate at a higher frequency, open to hearing new perspectives and challenging your own thoughts, this is the podcast for you. My purpose is to guide and help you move that needle one thread closer to becoming your truest, most authentic self. Let's do this. Hello, beautiful humans, and welcome back to an all-new episode on the Authentic Me podcast. So as most of my following know, I'm a mental health advocate working heavily in the suicide prevention space due to my own personal experiences around this topic. I want to start this episode by just prefacing that we will be diving deep into the topics around teen mental health, depression, anxiety, and suicide. So if you or anyone you care for is in need of professional support, please reach out to Lifeline by phoning 13 11 14, which is available 24 hours a day, or message a Lifeline crisis supporter on 0477 13 11 14, which is available from 6 p.m. to midnight every night. So what we say in today's conversation is a sensitive conversation around our own lived experience, and by no means we are saying that we understand exactly what you are going through or what is going to be the best for you and your mental health. So please seek professional advice and guidance if anything we say today either triggers or resonates with you and your own story. So today's special guest, I feel incredibly honored and privileged to be able to share her story, because there was a time in her life where she wanted to end it all. And if she did, we wouldn't be able to have this conversation today. Lauren suffered from depression since she was 13. In 2017, when Lauren was just 19, her mental state declined to the point where she made an attempt to take her own life. In this moment, Lauren's life was to change forever. Waking up in hospital with a fractured spine, a severed left foot, and broken right foot, which led her to the amputation of both her legs. Being told that she will never walk again, over the last 4 years, Lauren has gradually found her voice and purpose through being a voice for young people to never give up hope, no matter how dark the days get. So I got goosebumps the very first time that I met Lauren and heard her story, being part of a panel of lived experience for suicide prevention. So much of her story and her pain reminded me of myself when Gus died at 23 by suicide. So I'm so excited to get to bring her onto the show and share her own words and tell her story. So without further ado, please, my dearest community, allow me to introduce you to the beautiful and sweet angel, Lauren. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
A bit tongue-tied. It was a very long intro, but I thought I had to preface it with some, you know, trigger warnings and things like that, because
that's all good.
Yeah, what we're about to speak today is probably one of the most realist conversations that it can be, and one of the toughest conversations, as you know. Yeah. But I want to start with, like, how are you, given that we're in Victorian lockdown 6.3? How are you feeling with it all?
I'm going all right. I mean, I've definitely had my moments, as I think we all have, really. You know, sometimes you get excited because you think everything's going to be kind of finished with the lockdown, and then all of a sudden your mental health goes downhill again because you find out you're in another lockdown. But yeah, just taking it each day as it comes, really.
Yeah, so we were saying offline how it does feel a bit like a roller coaster of emotions, right? Sometimes it's like you're having a good day, and then sometimes it's just like, nah, this is really, really tough.
Yeah, I think it's just the whole unpredictability of everything too.
Yeah, no, I feel you. So Lauren, I wanted to, I guess, start this interview and start this conversation with telling our listeners what childhood was like for you growing up. How was your family life? Do you have siblings?
So growing up, my childhood was generally pretty good. I have a very close family, and I always kind of had a close friendship group, like in primary school and stuff. Even in high school, I had a really good friendship group. But I had a few problems as a kid with my bladder. So I had a lot of urinary incontinence. So I used to it's pretty embarrassing, but urinate myself at school all the time and stuff like that. So because of that, I would get quite severely bullied. And when this was happening a lot, none of the kids would want to play with me, like in primary school. And say if you had to choose a partner for sport, I wouldn't be able to participate in like the sport and stuff like that because I had nobody to do it with. So everything was all good apart from the bullying at school. Yeah.
Except that sounds like a massive part, a massive role in what would happen growing up, right? Like the last thing we want to do is be bullied or not feeling like we belong. And, you know, getting chosen last, we've all got that fear, I think, in school where you just want to, you don't want to be the last one to be selected because it's just, it's, there's so much shame around it.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think that that's what led you to your onset of depression? If it wasn't in family life, was it through school? 13's really young, right?
Pardon?
13's really young to start.
Yeah. Well, I think it was because of that, but I also have a very big family history of depression, bipolar, and just a lot of mental illness, generally speaking, in my family. So in a way, I do also think it's
genetic.
Of course, like the bullying, but also like a bit of a genetic predisposition.
Mm-hmm. When did you find out that you had depression or that you were given this label? What does that feel like?
So I was initially diagnosed with depression probably at about, 13. And it kind of, in a way, well, it was a big thing to take on at like such a young age, being diagnosed with depression that young. But it also at the time felt like a bit of a relief because I finally knew something was kind of going on with me. And it wasn't just me feeling like that way. It was actually, you know, something going on, that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people, when they do get diagnosed, do have report a sense of relief so that it's like, oh, now it does make sense and I can now look at what the symptoms are, how to treat it. It gives you insight and clarity to something where it before you probably just felt like, is this only happening to me? Does anyone else feel this way?
Yeah.
And so was that, like, did you seek help already around that time or was it like your family was pushing you towards it? What did that look like?
Pretty much initially it was the high school I went to picked up on it. And by that time I had started self-harming. And a couple of my friends kind of know, like I hid it, but accidentally, like my friends saw and stuff like that. So then out of worry, they kind of notified the school and then kind of went from there. My parents found out and then it went from, you know, me from seeing like the school psychologist to seeing a psychologist and then later on seeing like psychiatrist and all of that kind of stuff.
Can you tell us a little bit more about why people self-harm now that you've kind of gone to the other side and you have this hindsight? Because self-harm and suicide and having suicidal thoughts, it's very different. Self-harm is very different to that. Can you explain a bit in terms of what those differences are or why people use self-harm as a coping mechanism?
Well, for me at the time, I was self-harming. Continued on for 8 years, but for me at the time it kind of gave me, I can't really explain it properly, but a release. And it kind of, I thought that that was what I deserved and me inflicting pain on myself was what I deserved. So I wouldn't say an addiction, but it kind of, that's what I believe, like I deserve pain, I need to do this to myself, I need to be punished, I'm a bad person. And that, for me, I know it's so different for everyone. That's just how I felt when these instances occurred.
Yeah. I'm really sorry to, you know, hear that, because no one deserves to feel like they deserve, like, you know, that they're deserving of pain. And that feeling of lack of self-worth and a loss of self-esteem. Can you give us a little bit of an insight into, is there a difference between having suicidal thoughts and then going through with having a plan or having an action plan around it? Did you come up with a plan when the day that you decided to kill yourself?
I have and still do experience suicidal ideation every single day. And for me personally, as I said before, it's probably different for everyone. When I experience suicidal ideation, that is just a part of my depression for me. It's always in the back of my mind. I always think about it. When I was a teenager, I had previous suicide attempts before I was 19. But that night, I just remember being so deeply depressed that I saw absolutely no way out. And it was, in a way, premeditated, but in the same sense, it wasn't, because I knew something was going to happen, but I didn't know what was going to happen that night was the thing that happens.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what that night was for you? To what you're comfortable with sharing, of course.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So actually the morning of this happening, I saw my psychiatrist at the time. I was misdiagnosed with borderline personality disorder. And as you know yourself, a lot of mental illnesses, generally speaking, are so highly stigmatized, but especially with diagnoses like borderline personality disorder, you're instantly sought as and thought after as attention seeking and manipulative and all of that. So when I said, you need to do something right now, like I'm about to take my life, they laughed at me. And I just remember collapsing to the floor, vomiting and shaking. And I'd never been like that before. Like, I was full-blown shaking and vomiting, screaming, you need to do something right now, like something's about to happen. And I just got sent away. And it was that moment, like, I didn't have any hope at the time, but now looking back, that was my little bit of hope. You know, speaking up about how I was feeling to that doctor.
And it got shut down.
Yeah, it got instantly shut down. So I thought, you know what, mind my language, fuck this. I can't do this anymore. And that's when I jumped in front of a train that night. So my mum, I didn't know this at the time, actually followed me to the train tracks. I didn't have my phone or anything with me. It was just a mother's gut instinct. So she followed me down there, and I remember her calling the police, and the police and my mum just screaming out my name, and I could hear them, but I was in that mindset. I was like, no, I'm not coming to them, kind of thing. And so at the time, the trains were actually fully stopped, and then someone started them up again, and I was in the middle of the tracks, and I just stood there. And yeah, I got hit by the train. I flew about 40 meters in the air, and I was completely stuck under the train. And I remember hearing a huge crunch in my back. My left leg was completely cut in half at the seam. So not a nice image to imagine, but just blood everywhere. And my right foot was pretty much, the foot's like that, my right foot was pretty much like that. Every single bone in the foot was broken, and I was just screaming. And I remember the screams from my mum, because she actually saw it happen. And my dad came racing from work, and he was just hysterically crying on my chest at the scene. He could be on the scene because he's a police officer himself. So he was just screaming and crying, saying, you know, you need to hold on for me, you need to hold on for me. And the next thing I remember was waking up a week later in ICU.
Thank you so much for being so brave in sharing that. And I know it's not easy every time you retell that story and go back to that lived experience. So I applaud you for being able to have the courage and strength to share it. Really, it gives me goosebumps every time, until the day that it doesn't, which I'm not doing my job properly. That's rock bottom for you, that you can't get any lower than that. That is absolutely the bottom of the bottom of the bottom of the barrel. And at that time, could you comprehend what had happened really? Or was it all just a bit chaotic and a blur? Like, do you look back at that now and it's quite vivid, or has like your memory kind of blocked it to protect you just from reliving that trauma?
In a lot of ways, it's still really vivid, but in other ways, I feel like I blocked things out. And it wasn't until later on and over time, the things that I had initially blocked out straight after the accident, come back. And I always remember someone saying to me, like, you can suppress the shit out of your trauma and you can just, keep bottling it down and it can go down further and further and further and further. But the day it comes back up again, it's going to make it so much harder for you to deal with. And I thought, when somebody said that, like, that's a load of crap, you're just saying that. But when it did come up, you do realize how big the event was and how not only traumatic the actually being struck by the train was, but everything to come after.
Yeah, and I mean, do you have an official diagnosis of post-traumatic stress now, essentially? Because what resonates with me is, naturally, I think anyone's just going to have PTSD after an event like that. And for me, when I went to therapy afterwards as well, I realized how much my brain my consciousness tried to block things out to protect me, because the things that I saw and everything was just so traumatic. But then I realized if I don't process it, the pain and the memories is going to live within my body, and I have to move it and allow it to essentially move through me so that I could start processing and healing, because otherwise it was coming out in panic attacks, anxiety, tighten of the chest, like irrational emotions. It was coming out in all these different ways that I couldn't make sense of it.
Yeah. For me, it was coming out in anger, and it's probably not the best emotion to experience or put onto other people, but I was just so angry at everyone. And I was so angry at the doctor who let me down. And I was so angry at someone who started the trains up again. And I was so angry at myself and so angry at the way I looked and everything like that. And I didn't realize, probably until the start of this year, that at the time I really needed to feel that, because of course, when somebody lets you down like that and pretty much changes your life in ways a lot of people can't comprehend, of course you're going to be angry about it. But I was even angry about, being angry about it.
Yeah. And you were so young, babe, like at 19, one, we don't have the self-awareness of like how to process those emotions. So it comes out first and foremost, I think a lot of delinquents and teenagers and youth, it comes out in anger. It comes out in the way that we express ourselves, because it's frustration. It's anger at the system. It's anger at, the duty of care that failed you. You reached out for help and it was like that door was shut from you, and that was your last straw.
And I feel like I'm angry now, but not in the same sense. I know how bad the mental health system is, and I know a lot of people, quite frankly, who I was in and out of hospital with as a teenager, who are no longer here because of the mental health system letting them down. And I'm angry about the way that people are treated in it, but I can't be angry anymore at the person who let me down. So in a sense, it's more at the whole system than one person.
Yeah. And because if we choose to villainize one single person, we could, but I think the reality is it's so much bigger than that. It's so much more than the one person that we can point our finger towards. There's a lot of responsibility at stake. And I say with suicide, suicide's a community problem. It's not just the one person. And it affects all of us.
It does.
Yeah. So like I had mentioned, you had hit rock bottom. How do you then, for those people listening right now that may be feeling like they're at their rock bottom, how do you then find hope when life feels so bleak?
Well, finding hope definitely wasn't easy at all. I think collectively it built up over time. It wasn't just one little moment that gave me hope. It was little moments all together that eventually gave me hope. So it was stuff like when I got told I'd never walk again, standing for the first time, that gave me hope. And when I got told I wouldn't walk again, and that I begged and begged and begged them to just give me two prosthetic legs, like just let me try. And I got up, and they, you know, my physio team and everything looked away for a second, and there I was up and down the rails just starting to walk, because I thought, you know what, stuff you all, you're saying I can do this, I'm going to prove you wrong. And because I'm a very stubborn person, sometimes not always like for the good, but yeah, if I put my mind to something and people are saying, no, you can't do this and you won't do this, I'm like, well, yes, I can. So it was probably that moment that really gave me the hope, because I finally did something that everyone around me was saying I couldn't do, and it kind of made me believe in myself.
Amazing. And it's, I'm just going to, this is an authentic podcast, I'm just going to unplug that. Hello? Can you just leave it at the door? I'm in a meeting, I'm sorry. Just at the letterbox in the mail room. Yeah. I love that we're in the middle of lockdown. So, of course, the mailman comes when I'm recording an epic podcast episode. I'm probably just going to leave that in as well.
I've been online shopping so badly lately that our delivery guy knows everyone in our family by our first name.
Literally, I'm like, that's the best visitor that comes, but he couldn't have come at a freaking worse
time. Don't eat anything, but it's just addictive once you get online.
Online shopping. And okay, well, let's go back to that kind of story. I guess I want to as well highlight, like, why do you think people choose suicide? Is it something that is just like, it just is an option for people? Or like, why do you think people end up going to such extremities?
This is my belief personally. I think that people who end up committing suicide don't always want to die. I think that they're in so much pain mentally that they don't know what to do, and they just want the pain they're experiencing to stop. I don't think that when somebody commits suicide, you know, they want to hurt their family and their friends and everything like that. They just need it to, like, they just feel like that's the only way what they're experiencing will end.
Yeah. And I've done a whole bunch of study in the suicide space after losing Angus as well, and you're absolutely right. I think most people that choose to die by suicide, often it's because they want the pain to stop and they don't want to feel like a burden anymore, which is a lot of what the research says, how it's not so much that you don't, obviously you care about your family and you know that there's love and people that you love and care about are going to be hurt. However, you actually feel like you're a burden to them and you're not actually providing value in their life and contribution. So it far outweighs it, even though it's not necessarily reality, because now you know how many people care about you and how much, you know, how much support you have around you.
Yeah, it's definitely a hard concept for a lot of people to understand, I think, unless you've been through it yourself. whether you've experienced mental health issues or suicidal ideation, or, you know, knowing someone that's passed away from suicide, a lot of the time, a lot of people do have a good friend base, and a lot of the time, a lot of people do have a good family. I think it really annoys me when people say, like, it's selfish and stuff like that, because
it shouldn't be that way. Yeah,
it's much more than that. It's an illness, and when people discriminate against mental illnesses in general, I just think, but it can happen to you one day, and the way you're speaking about me, or the way you're speaking about other people who are feeling this way, is completely wrong, because you would not want other people to say what you're saying about us to you. And yeah, I think the reality is people need to realize that one day they can wake up and they can have a mental illness. It doesn't discriminate.
Yeah, and you know, suicide can happen to everyone and anyone. What you're saying, it can happen to people in high socioeconomic areas, low socioeconomic areas, any race, any religion, any gender, and it doesn't discriminate. So to keep an open mind and to seek to understand, instead of just trying to force your opinion on something that you may not be able to relate, because eventually it could happen to you or someone around you. And it's just best to keep an open mind and not be so judgmental, right, around mental health and people that have made attempts at their life.
For sure.
What are some of the then daily habits or routine that you now have and have incorporated into your life to ensure that you do stay mentally well?
I have an amazing family. So they're pretty good at picking up whether I'm, well, they know I'm struggling, like, pretty much all the time, right? But if I'm having a really bad day, they will pick up on it straight away, and they will be like, is there anything we can do? Do you need help doing this? What do you want to do today? Like, they try to do stuff to kind of reiterate that they're there, they care, and what you're going through is real, so please just let us know, like, what we can do to help. I also speak up, like, online now and stuff like that. I never used to do that. And I talk to my friends openly about it, and I never used to do that either. I mean, I think I have the most, I think I'm biased, but amazing friendship group. We've all been friends for over 10 years, and we've been through a lot more than, like, any average friendship group would ever have to go through. And we're all, you know, the seven of us are still best friends, and we speak to each other every day. And for me, I think knowing that I have friends that never have judged me because of what's happened, always, you know, give me a big hug and accept me for who I am, it's just that's kind of a big part of what gets me through each day now.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And having a strong support network, we can't underestimate that. It's critical, right? We can't do everything on our own, which is why you and me both, we're always saying, reach out for help. Help is here. Don't be afraid to lean on other people for support, because that's what they're there for. You know, we can't do all of this life thing on our own. Life's hard.
It is. And I think it's hard for everyone at different stages.
Yeah. And you know that you would be that friend for them. So it makes sense that you have really good friends around you, because that's also a reflection of who you are. You're a good person. And if good people deserve good friends.
Oh, thank you.
It's okay. A little bit about that, you know, when you said you now start showing up online, you're starting to share your story, you're going on other podcasts, you're opening up the conversation. How do you, if you do stop, but how do you stop caring about what other people think? Do you stop caring about what other people think, or is it that your message is more important than what other people think?
I think there's always a part of me that is always worried about what other people think about me, But I think that's a natural thing that everyone kind of experiences. For me now, just me sharing my story and really trying to advocate for mental health is such a big, like, something that's so important for me. And I think that that kind of outweighs any kind of negativity that you'll get from it, because you know what you're doing and you know the reason why you're doing it. And I just think now, if, you know, if my story and my journey can help even just one other person, then that's all that matters to me, really.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, if you can just help one person not get to the low point that you did, that's your job done, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's one of your greatest fears? Do you still have fears?
I think that one of my greatest fears is definitely thinking that maybe my story isn't helping other people, and that maybe I'm just posting too much and that me sharing all of this is annoying people. I know that sounds really stupid, but it's just something that I stress about sometimes. But then I take a step back and think, well, this is why I'm doing it, and I'm going to stay, like, true to myself. And yeah.
Well, staying true to yourself is really important, because if you know what your intention is, you know what your purpose is to sharing that. Again, it kind of does come back to who cares what other people think. And it's a constant balancing act, because we're naturally human beings that do care what other people think. We want to be liked. We don't want to be hated. And then I think what it sounds like to me, that there's still parts of you that when you're feeling low, it's that, like, I'm not worthy of telling my story, or I'm not good enough to be sharing my story, right? It's the ego and the inner critic inside you that has a louder voice. And I encourage you to turn that volume down. We all have an inner critic, right? We all feel like, oh God, imposter syndrome, or like, I'm not worthy of having this stage and having this voice. But this voice is your voice. It's your platform, and you should be able to freely do whatever it is that you want to do on it. And the right people that get your message and see you and hear you, they're going to resonate with it. And I think it's so important. Yeah. Well done. Well, on the other side of fear, what does happiness look like to you?
I'm not 100% sure what happiness looks like to me. I mean, I haven't been genuinely happy my whole life. So it's not strange, but it'd be like a bit contradicting for me to say, like, I've been happy and this is how happiness looks like for me, because that unfortunately hasn't been the case. But if I were to try to imagine it, I'd probably say, like, one day having a beautiful husband and beautiful kids and living in a in a home with lots of dogs and just laughing and having a purpose and kind of seeing my kids grow up and being able to explore with them and travel with them and all of that kind of stuff.
It's interesting, because what you've highlighted there, and I don't want to be coaching because I'm a coach outside of this, but a lot of what you've just said is external factors. There are a lot about other people, right? And I wonder where the happiness, where you might be struggling, is because you haven't internalized your happiness, babe. You haven't looked at inside you, what could you do to make yourself happy now? And I know that might be a really hard question, but your vision there, as beautiful as it is, it's, can you see how it's all about external, like a husband, a family, a holiday, a house? They're all external factors where you could find happiness in the most basic things. Is there a time, or can you honestly not remember, and that's so okay, that you have been happy, whether it was moons and moons and moons ago, but what did happiness look like for you when you were a kid? Or you don't really remember because it's been that long?
When I was a kid, happiness for me was going down to our beach house, going to the beach, and just being at the beach all day with my younger sister. And we used to have boogie boarding competitions at the back surf beach.
Oh, awesome.
And we used to just be at the beach all day. And when the sun used to set, it was just sitting there and looking at the sunset and listening to the sound of the waves and everything like that, and just being like in that moment after a long day.
See, I love that, because what you just said, literally, babe, I don't know if you noticed, but it's like your tone of voice went higher. You were more confident. There was more certainty in that memory. So for me, it would seem like nature is something that might bring you happiness. And, you know, the best part is that a sun sets and rises, you know, every single day. And just that natural beauty of the light and that hour, that could bring you happiness. At the most basic and simple thing, happiness is quite free, right?
Yeah.
And that also comes down to, I think, if we instill more gratitude, you know, gratitude in our daily lives about just the basic things of, I get to see another sunset, I get to see another sunrise. If you have time, and if you do live, I don't know where you live, but it's like if you have access to the ocean, that is, it's free. It's at our doorstep, essentially. Yeah. And we've got really beautiful beaches here in Australia.
Yeah, we do.
There's a couple more questions here in terms of the time that we're recording this podcast has been so perfect, because we're coming up to campaigns like Are You Okay Day next week on Thursday the 9th, and then World Suicide Prevention Day is on the 10th. And they're very big campaigns. Is there any message that you want to share with my listeners that we're going to put this around this time? Is there any particular message that you want to share around these campaigns, or you know, what people can do to help spread the word about mental health awareness?
I'll first start off by saying that I find it like pretty fitting and ironic that Are You Okay Day is actually on my birthday. So I found it a bit freaky this year that landed on my birthday. But yeah, pretty much with Are You Okay Day and stuff, I think it's a fantastic initiative, and I think that it's fantastic to keep the topic of mental health, you know, going, and like starting the conversation is fantastic also. But Are You Okay Day shouldn't just be on one day of the year. I think it should be on every single day of the year. And like I said before, I think it's a great message, but why should it be just one day of the year? You know, you should be asking your friends, are they okay? Or if they say, yeah, I'm good, thanks, and you know they're not okay, you should ask them, like, how are you really going? And let them, you know, speak and truly listen to them, and then offer things like, what can I do to help? You know, and say stuff like, I'm always here to talk to you any time of the day, all of that kind of stuff. And that kind of applies to World Suicide Prevention Day. I think it should be every single day of the year too, because it's not just, the reality is suicide isn't going to stop
every day. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Suicide isn't going to stop. So I think we should speak about it. And I think that is something that people shouldn't be afraid to speak about, because the word suicide, you can say it and it will instantly empty out a room of people. And that shouldn't be the case. Why, I don't get why people are so ashamed of it, and why it's such a taboo topic in a way.
Yeah. And then with advocates like yourself, we can then help spread that conversation and normalize the conversation around suicide and around mental health. You're exactly right. Asking the question, also, which is a myth, asking someone if they're suicidal doesn't then make someone more suicidal. And that's in our learnings. There's science that proves it. When you actually ask the question, it helps.
Belief.
Yeah, it's a sign of relief. It's a sign that you're open to having this conversation. It's a sign that you're ready to hold space for someone where, you know, we've all been in a conversation where when someone asks, hey, are you okay? And you're like, yeah, fine, thanks. And it's like, then they don't ask anymore because they don't actually want to know the deep answer.
Yeah. But
you can actually hold space and be ready and open to potentially have a no, I'm not doing okay. That is huge, to really, really listen in on someone. And exactly what you said, Lauren, like, are you okay really? Asking it again, because you actually know a bit better. There's signs, there's your gut instinct, there's things that, you know, is showing that this person's not okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think when we're growing up and all of that, we're always taught, like from young kids, when somebody asks how we are, like your parents and stuff will say, you have to say, I'm good, how are you? I'm good, how are you? I'm good, how are you? And although, like, I think it's always good to be polite to others and nice to other people, I think it also desensitizes a lot of things when we're actually grown up. So because we're so used to saying, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good, when we're not good, we still say that because that's what we're so used to doing.
Yeah. We're desensitized. Exactly. We're conditioned to almost just say, how are you? I'm good. And when then so many people fall through the cracks because the reality is we're not good. And it's that double-edged sword of, like, you know, pretending to be something that we're not, when really if you're not good, let us know, tell someone, share it.
Yeah.
I want to finish off as well with, do you have any advice for young people listening, you know, girls that are younger than you as well, on getting through this lockdown slump? I know that you felt it yourself and you've been in this lockdown slump. For those that are listening in Victoria, I mean, we're coming up to 215, 216 days in lockdown overall in the last 18 months. It's heavy and we're wearing thin as Australians. Is there any advice or anything that we can do to help people just feel a little bit of relief and happiness?
Well, I want to start off by saying I know how freaking annoying it is and how hard it is. I think everyone's felt the kind of lockdown slump, and anyone who said or has said, you know, I've been fantastic the whole lockdown, I think personally would be lying to themselves.
And is a psychopath, and we should be worried.
Yeah, literally. Nah, but in all seriousness, I think obviously it's, you can't really catch up with friends and distant family and stuff, but stay connected with them, like whether it's a Zoom call or having a games night on Zoom or whatever with your friends, or having a chat with them, or just having more downtime with yourself and doing stuff you really love, like whether it be reading or watching your favorite TV shows, you know, catching up on all of that kind of stuff. Just appreciating what we have had before the lockdown and kind of appreciating what we have now. I mean, compared to other countries in the world, we're doing a lot better. But I think it's just trying to ride the waves of the lockdown and knowing that what you are feeling is valid and what you're feeling is real, and you're allowed to feel that way. You shouldn't shun yourself or be ashamed for feeling how you are. But just knowing that it will end, and we've just got to find hope within ourselves and within each other to get through this really crappy time in Melbourne.
Yeah. Just keep going, right? Don't give up hope, and stay strong, stay connected. I think a common theme that you've really shown in this podcast is to really lean on people, and there are people out there that are going to support you. You don't have to go this alone. You're never alone, and there are people that love you and care for you. So reach out.
Yeah.
Where can people find you, Lauren? Where are you most accessible?
Probably through Instagram.
What's your Instagram handle?
Lauren underscore McDonough.
Yeah. So, and I think that's MC, not an MAC, MC DONOUGH. So Lauren, LAUREN underscore MCDONOUGH. So make sure you give her a follow. Make sure you say happy birthday to her next week on Are You Okay Day. I'll make sure I get this podcast out before then, so there's all of you guys listening that can show some love and some support. And a final question for you, Lauren, which I ask everyone on this podcast. This podcast is called The Authentic Me. So what does authenticity mean to you?
I think for me, authenticity means a lot more than other people realize. I truly love it when other people aren't afraid to be themselves and unafraid to speak their mind and unafraid to have opinions on things. I feel like too many people are really conditioned to keep quiet about a lot of topics and a lot of things because they're so worried about what other people are going to think of them. I think that when people are truly authentic, you know, they're just being able to be free, like within themselves. That probably made absolutely no sense, but there we go.
Absolutely, of course it does. And Lauren, I wanted to acknowledge you and thank you today for showing up and being your authentic self, you know, sharing your truth, sharing your story, even though there are some parts of your chapters that are so incredibly dark. So I wish you so much light. I do wish you so much happiness on your journey as you continue to grow and as you continue to find more parts of yourself when you do share your story, because bit by bit, I said this in the last panel that we did, the healing and the poison is going to eventually leave you every time that you share and every time that you connected. I'm not going to pretend that you're going to have just all rosy days and butterflies and rainbows. It's going to be hard. But just know that, you know, you're backed. We support you and we love you and we adore you. And we're so excited to watch you grow in this journey.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lauren. Guys, if you love this episode, please, please, please show some support. This one is, you know, needs you more than ever right now to get the message out about mental health and suicide awareness. So screenshot this on your Spotify, on your Apple, on your Google Podcast, and tag myself and Lauren on your story so that we know that you've listened. Until next time, guys, stay your truest, most authentic self. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for joining us this week on The Authentic Me. If you found value in this episode, please smash that like button and share with someone who may also benefit from our content. Never miss an episode by subscribing to this podcast, available on all audio streaming platforms. And make sure to let me know what you want to hear more of on this journey to your truest, highest, authentic self. See you next time. Bye.